Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Please welcome the Dean of the Annenberg School for Communication, Ernest J. Wilson III.
Good evening, everyone. It's a tradition here at in L.A. to start off an address like this by commenting on a very serious matter, and that's the temperature of Fahrenheit in New York City. You'll be happy to know it's 34 degrees. I won't even think what it is in Cambridge or Boston, probably worse, or Chicago is even worse. But I really do want to welcome all of you to this very, very important conference and conversation that we're going to be having over the next 24 hours. It's an extremely important topic. It raises a number of issues which are absolutely essential for the future development of both new media and broader issues that we are concerned about, such as minor issues like democracy. How do we understand the impact of these new social media on important issues like market evolution, democracy, globalization, citizenship, etc.? Just as a brief word of introduction, the Annenberg School for Communication consists of two schools. We have a professionally oriented school of journalism on the one hand, and we have a slightly more academic oriented school, the School of Communications, on the other. We work very closely across those two schools, and we also have 14 centers, research centers, including the Knight Center for Digital Media, the Norman Lear Center, Center for the Digital Future. And so this is the environment that we are welcoming you to today. On behalf of my fellow faculty members and researchers and students, I do welcome you here to the school. I cannot tell you what a huge pleasure it is to be able to cooperate with my colleagues from the right-hand coast, from the Berkman Center. We have been conspiring to do this event or an event like this for a number of years now, and it was a very happy coincidence of interest and time and topic that allowed us to come together. I can't resist saying that I remember going to the second Berkman Internet and Society Conference there in on Harvard's campus, and there was a raging debate about whether or not there really was something called a digital divide, or whether we should be worried about that, or whether this technology would lift all boats. So it really is a delight, and I really want to thank especially John Palfrey for his continued engagement with our work, and Colin McLeod. I'd just like the two of them to stand up and make sure everybody knows. It really is a delight. And I also want to welcome two colleagues from the MacArthur Foundation, Alice Beth Revere, of course, who was here, and her colleague, John Bratton. So welcome to you guys as well. Well, this is a pretty cool event for me, too, because I've been dean for 9 months. I'm sort of the freshman dean in a lot of this, coming from far, far away Washington, D.C. And over the past 9 months or so, we've been working here at the Annenberg School to develop three strategic themes that I want to just briefly mention to you. They all start with the letter I, because I discover the older I get, I can't remember things that don't start with the same letters. Or have some other mnemonic device that link them together. One is international, the second is impact, and the third is innovation. So we've had a series of faculty discussions, faculty meetings, faculty retreats, to think about ways that the Annenberg School for Communication can express those strategic concerns and introduce them into our pedagogy, into our research, and into our service. And so when John and Colin came to me and talked about the purposes of this event, it seemed to be a perfect fit, because we will be talking about international issues, we will be talking about the impact of these technologies on society, and we will be talking about innovation, the ways that all of you in this audience are innovating, and the impact that you are having through your innovations on the capacities of others in your communities to innovate both with technology and with political engagement and so forth. So it really is a delight to welcome all of you. What I'd like to do is just to take this opportunity to share a couple of ideas with you as we think about what we do over the next 24 hours. Then I'm going to introduce John, who in turn will introduce Elsbeth to carry on the conversation. But I want to start off and urge us to be extremely enthusiastic, extremely positive, and extremely skeptical about the work that we, the voices that we hear from the stage and the things that we say ourselves. Encouraging optimism, encouraging enthusiasm, but also being skeptical. One of the purposes of this event, and I know John will talk more about that, is to question, to interrogate some of the relationships that we see between social media on the one hand and other important social outcomes that we care about on the others. Those might be equality. What I want to talk about briefly tonight, and I know John will pick up this theme, is democracy. And so to be slightly provocative, let me suggest to you that the trends in democratic behavior and performance, at least in the United States, if you'll let me just concentrate on the US for a moment, over the past 25 years, if we define democracy as some combination of competitiveness, CPR, it's another useful mnemonic device, competition, participation, rights and responsibilities, and the creation and protection of an independent sphere, autonomous from government. So if we roughly define democracy as those things, and we look at a lot of quantitative indicators in the United States of America, what has been the performance of democracy over the past 25 years? Say in terms of voting rates, has it gone up or has it gone down? South, something like 25% of Americans vote in off-year elections, 25%. So we have 25% of our population electing our elected officials. Some like Sam Putnam have talked about the decline in participation in the United States of America, broadly defined, not only voting, but bowling leagues, as he likes to refer to, or other civic organizations. What pattern do we see? Going south. So on a number of indicators, I would submit to you that if we're going to talk about this thing over here, media, whether it's social media or traditional media, and this thing over here, democracy, which I hope will be part of the discussion over the next 24 hours, that we cannot make a one-to-one relationship that something that changes over here will automatically change into something over here. Because if that were true, and we see the expansion of the internet in the United States, then internet goes like this, then what should be happening to democracy? Same direction. Well, it ain't perfectly clear to me that in the United States of America, one unit of social media or new media or digital media equals one unit increase of democracy. Now, there are a number of folks who've written about this, of course, in scholarly terms. Some of you probably remember the book Open Networks, Closed Regimes that was done by Boaz and Khalid Teal, and they made the same point internationally. You introduce the internet into China, and one unit of increase of the internet in China does not lead to one increase unit of democracy. And so what I would like us to think about, while we're concentrating on the lessons that we bring from Chicago, or that we bring from New York City, or Oakland, or LA, that let's have a bit of a note of skepticism that we may see changes in behavior. But what I'd simply like us to think about is whether or not those changes in behavior are going to aggregate up into changes in the depth and quality of democracy. Or as my colleague Manuel Castells will talk about tomorrow, I see him here this evening, do they actually change the power relationships in society so that the dispossessed, the unheard, the poor have their power quotient increase or not? I would like to think that it does. There is certainly some empirical evidence that suggests that you introduce these new media and democracy will increase. But let's hold that open as an empirical question rather than one that we assume at the beginning. And then we might be able to find best practices, which will help us link up more closely the new digital media on the one hand, and democratic activities, values, participation on the other. So that's sort of the skeptical note that I want to introduce. Another point that I would like to make that I do feel strongly about and that we're working on here at the Annenberg School is that the discussions that we have are taking place in an ecosystem, hopefully ECHO, E-C-O, and not E-C-H-O system, although there's a bit of that as well, where there are a number of voices looking at the relationship between the media on the one hand and democracy on the other. And there are a multitude of them. Let me just toss out four of them and suggest ways that they might think about this relationship between media and democracy. It'll be a bit of a stereotype, and I apologize in advance for the shorthand, but I don't want to go on forever, because we do have other speakers on the agenda. And so I'm going to describe four communities of practice, epistemic communities, or institutions, if you will. One is the traditional print media and their view of the relationship. Secondly is the digital media community, which of course is lumps a lot of groups together. Thirdly is the public broadcasting community and their definition of that relationship. And fourthly, and easier to talk about, is the commercial media and their view of the relationship between these changes and democracy. How many of you here have had the privilege of going to a large collection of print media people and hear them describe the state of their business? Anybody had a privilege of doing that? Isn't that the happiest thing you've ever had? It is like going to a wake. Really smart people who've been doing this stuff all their life. And it's very depressing. And the syllogism goes something like this. Newspapers are a core bedrock of any democracy. Newspapers are dying. Ergo, democracy in America is being put at great risk because of the death of traditional print newspapers. So that's one perspective on the relationship between media and democracy. Digital communities. Now, if you go to other meetings, as many of people in this room do, you get a completely different story. And the syllogism runs something like this. New media are opening new channels of communication for all, creating unprecedented opportunities for participation in traditional and new ways, and promoting the competition of ideas. These new technologies are spreading rapidly, ergo, new media, democracy are made for one another, and it's happening, and it's going to happen at an increasing rate. That's the second syllogism. The third syllogism is sort of the public broadcasting syllogism, and I have to confess that I'm fascinated with this topic in part because I'm on the board of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the new chair of their new digital media committee. But it's also a really important, I think, component of this ecosystem that we'll talk about. Their syllogism might run something like this. Non-commercial space is essential for democracy's survival. Let me repeat that. Non-commercial space is essential for democracy's survival. The providers of that non-commercial space in the traditional broadcasting world they're facing hard times. Public television viewership is doing what? Going south. What's happening in public radio after a rise of 10 years, it's flattened out. So their syllogism would be that if the traditional public service media that has provided all of us with this tremendous opportunity of a non-commercial public space, if they are flattening out or declining, then what does that suggest for democracy? Flattening out or declining. Now the final one, before I bring this to a close, is the syllogism for the commercial media, and this is the really fun one. Since I've become dean, I've been spending some time at NBC Universal and Sony and talking to all those characters. It's a very different discourse than I hear when I go to my CPB meetings, I can assure you. It might go something like this. Commercial media is desperately trying to figure out how to leverage its existing assets to move to new platforms and to stay in business. first part of the syllogism. Democracy is a good thing, comma, in principle. But government has moved away, comma, thank goodness, comma, from pro-democracy regulatory requirements. Ergo, I'm really too busy to have to think about this democracy stuff. Let me just turn to what I really need to pay attention to. So these are four very distinct communities. All of them are inaccurate. All of them are wrong. All of them are right. And I think the challenge for us over the next 24 hours, in part, is to figure out the bits and pieces from this collective ecosystem that are probably accurate empirically, to decide how we can work more closely together. Because if we really are all interested in democracy, I can assure you, if it's just the people who are working on digital media who are going to bring democracy to America, with all due respect, it ain't going to happen. Nor is it going to happen if the public media, public service media people are acting on their own. Nor is it sufficient for non-governmental organizations in South Central LA to work on their own. The only way we're going to get an effective transition using these new media toward a more robust and deeper democracy is if all of these four groups start interacting and communicating with one another more effectively. And so what I would like to charge you with over the next 24 hours is to think about how that is possible, both in the abstract, but also in researchy, kind of academic-y sort of ways. So how do we know, in fact, if the interactivity, user-generated content that we see in the new media, the digital media over here, will work its way into the democratic practices over there? That's not a question, a normative question. It's not an ideological question. It's an empirical question. It either does it or it doesn't. And the sooner we can find out those close relationships, I think the better. And then the final point, I think I would, two quick questions is, one, what are you doing about it? I mean, there's all this theoretical stuff and research and so forth, but when you go back home to Chicago or Boston or wherever, what are you doing about the relationship between the media and democracy? And then one of my faculty jumped on me. I gave a little version of this earlier, and she said, this is Sandra Ball-Rakich. She said, well, you know, the notion of participation is changing. That, you know, Putnam's work relies on the indicators of the 1940s and 1950s. Well, when people post stuff for McCain or Clinton or Obama on YouTube, that's a form of political participation. That may change the democratic calculus. That may reshape power in America. So I would ask us to think about that, and I would also ask us to think about that in a global setting. The answers that we come to in this setting, in Los Angeles, et cetera, may not be relevant for Accra. They may not be relevant for Sao Paulo. They may be relevant, and I think there are a lot of correspondences and things we can learn that we can learn from the South. But let's put that on the table as one of the things that we'll wrestle with. We'll not answer a priori, but we'll listen to one another carefully over the next 24 hours, learn from one another, and then share our experiences with one another. With that, let me ask John to come to the stage.